Welcome to the True Condos Podcast with Andrew LaFleur, the place to get the truth on the Toronto condo market and condo investing in Toronto.
Okay, it's my pleasure to welcome to the show for the first time, Ash Navabi. Ash is the senior economist at Housing Matters. Ash, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here, Ash. Looking forward to chatting with you about rent. Sorry, Ash, just one second.
No problem.
Okay.
That was your kid?
That was a couple of mine.
Ah.
That just ran upstairs here. Let's start again. Okay.
Okay.
My pleasure to welcome to the show, Ash Navabi. Ash is the senior economist at Housing Matters. Ash, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Andrew. I'm excited to be here.
Great. Excited to have you here and to chat with you about rent control and other things. I know you wrote a great article about that recently published on CBC. We'll get to that in a minute, but why don't you just tell everybody a little bit more about your story, your background, how you got interested in, you know, housing related issues and rent control, you know, what's your expertise in, and what are you sort of most passionate about, most interested in?
Right. So I have a bachelor's degree in economics. I did a couple of years of graduate school in economics. So I view the world through an economic lens. And to me, the tools of economics, of methodological individualism, as we call it, just understanding that every part of society came about because of some individual or individuals made choices about particular concrete, physical products of goods and services, of physical things to do in the universe. It's amazing to me, the power of economics, and we can explain everything in the world that we see using the tools of economics. And it's just wonderful to me what economics can do. And housing, as someone who lives in the GTA, It's just on everyone's minds. And to me, it's so obvious what economics can do for this issue. And the lessons of economics have been ignored for so long that I feel like there's a real need for someone to come in and just give the basic economics, the basic models of economics and how they apply to housing and how I think the popular conceptions of the housing market and housing policy are just so misguided as viewed from the lens of economics.
Interesting. So just to be clear, Ash, I mean, you're obviously, you know, a big part of the organization, Toronto Housing Matters, that you're part of, is obviously pro housing and YIMBY, as you say. We'll get into that.
Yes.
In a minute. But you, like, so a lot of people look at it and say, oh, this guy or these people behind this organization must be just a bunch of developers.
Right.
But it sounds like you're not in the development industry at all. Is that correct?
So I'm personally not involved in the development industry. Our organization is fairly new. We have very, very little funding. We have, most of our funding is from personal donors. Of course, okay. There's a lot of interest from developers.
Take a step back and just
sure.
Toronto Housing, the organization.
The organization is named
it?
Housing Matters.
Housing Matters.
Right.
I keep wanting to call it Toronto Housing, but.
Right. Well, our URL is confusingly titled torontohousingmatters.com.
Okay.
And our Twitter handle is torontohousing_. Housing Matters is a lot of people think that housing matters, and so a lot of the URLs and web addresses were taken. So we were limited in that sense, but we view our organization, of course, primarily interested in Toronto housing to start with, but we think nationally and internationally, these issues are coming up again and again. And we think the lessons of economics are international. They aren't particular within some country or some city's borders. But yes, we are Torontonians. The organization started in Toronto. This is an accusation that's been levied against us, some AstroTurf group of some front by developers. We have not even started seriously fundraising yet. We're going to do that in the first quarter of the new year. But as of now, this is a very bootstrap organization. Our offices are borrowed from someone else. We're in a technology company. We have no direct ties to major developers. This is, we just think basic economics is true, and it applies to housing just like it applies to carrots, just like it applies to mattresses, just like it applies to cars. We're really passionate about the economics of housing.
Okay, so what is the purpose of Housing Matters and the organization? Like, what's the sort of mission statement, as it were, or what? Like, why does Housing Matters exist, and what are you trying to accomplish as a group, as an organization?
We're trying to accomplish simply increasing the supply of housing in Toronto. So we think that the laws of supply and demand are real. And the laws of supply and demand make direct reference to prices and quantities. There is a relationship between prices and quantities of any good. And if we want to lower the price of something, we have to increase the supply of that good. This is the law of supply. As the quantity supplied increases, the price will fall, given that demand isn't shifting. But if demand is also increasing, then supply has to increase faster than demand, or at least as fast as demand. This is elementary economics. Every economics textbook will talk about this. And so we just want to make sure that policymakers understand this as well.
Mm-hmm. But I guess maybe peeling it back a bit, maybe it's obvious, but just so we're on the same page, why do you want to increase supply?
So we think increasing supply will lower prices, and we think prices are too darn high in the city of Toronto.
Okay, so I think a lot of people would agree with that basic principle, a concept of Toronto housing is expensive. Affordability crisis, housing crisis, there's so many terms that are thrown around lately. Right. It just seems to obviously get worse every year.
Right.
Besides just the obvious, but like maybe in your opinion, as you see from your lens, like not speaking just about the supply, but what's the bigger story here in your opinion? Like, why is Toronto housing so expensive? Why are we so unaffordable? How did we get here? Like, how do you sort of explain how we got to where we are today? And then moving forward, mm-hmm. how do we get out of that problem? How do we fix it?
So the way I understand the story is that we had a fairly normal housing market until there was a recession in the mid-70s. And during that recession, the number of units was decreasing. New units built was decreasing. And because other people were still moving into the city, there was a demand for rent control. So we had our first non-war-related rent control in the city in 1975. And then that led to other problems, as you get with rent control, and that those rental policies were exacerbated over time, and they correlate quite strongly with the problems of rental housing in the city. On the flip side, for buying housing, we have zoning laws that restrict land. The quantity of land that you can build on is restricted through zoning laws, through land use planning laws.
Right. Like you can't just rip your house down and put up a 20-story condo.
You can't just rip your house down and put up a 20-story condo. You can't even add an addition that's longer than 18 inches in right. some jurisdictions, right? So forget 20 stories, 18 inches is also too much.
You can't rip down a 5-story building and right. build an 8-story building.
Right. So we think you don't even need the there's a lot of talk about condos. There's too many condos going up, etc. People are worried we're going to fill up the city with condos. Here's just an interesting fact. Only about 15% of the city is zoned for condos, right? But where in that city is that 15% distributed? It's mostly in the downtown cores and the major avenues of the city and near the highways and major TTC stops. Mm-hmm. So in other words, where people work and where people along people's transits on their way to work.
Right.
Right. So because people do most of their traveling and spend most of their day near condos, they think the whole city must be filling up with condos. When in reality, it's just about 15% is condos. So we're not actually in favor of turning the whole city into condotopia. We think what's more important actually is so-called missing middle housing. Is the housing in between a detached home and a mid-rise. So just more fourplexes, we think, could solve this problem. Hmm. Or not solve it, just alleviate it greatly.
Okay. So you got that out of the way. You're not, we've established you're not a front for big developers to push their policy agendas to build 80-story condos all over the city.
Right.
And you're not looking to like you said, turn condo-wise every single corner of the city. But even just modest, the missing middle is again another buzzword. A lot of people talking about it lately. Are you watching what's happening in, bit of a sidebar, but I'm curious what your take is. Are you watching what's happening in, I believe it's Minneapolis, that city in Minnesota in the US? There's a big announcement there. Are you tracking with that?
I am only very superficially familiar with what's happened there. But from what I understand, it was very positive that they have virtually upzoned most of the city, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I'm not too familiar with it either. I was wondering.
Right.
Because that's a lot of people are talking about that right now. Basically, the city, like you said, upzoned the entire city. Like,
right.
You can build, I gather they're basically saying any house anywhere, any property is sort of fair game to be upzoned, within reason. Like I said, you still can't build a 20-story tower or replace your house with a 20-story tower, but maybe you could replace your house with a triplex, you know?
Right.
what a shocking idea, you know, put three apartments instead of one.
I think that's a really big stumbling block for a lot of people, that when you talk about deregulating land use, people think immediately, oh, that must mean you want to turn everywhere into a gigantic condo. And you got to tell them no, just allowing more triplexes would be pretty good. It's just there are so many huge of these bay end gables in Toronto, right? They're already three stories tall, but why don't we just have more of them? Why don't we just have larger three-story buildings that fit more families inside?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Why do we limit so much of the city to only detached homes, to only that virtually limit them to single families? Although there have been recent regulations that as of right, you can lease more of a detached home to more than one family. So that's a great development. But just more duplexes and triplexes and row homes, townhomes, those would be all, welcome additions that would greatly increase the supply of housing in the city without also to what many think are unaesthetic, glass condos. Mm-hmm. But, of course, we need more condos if you want Toronto to be a large, major metropolis, Well, it doesn't have to be, the whole city doesn't have to be condos. Just more of these triplexes and fourplexes would be really good. And just let people build those.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It seems like a simple thing, but it's certainly not. And there's a lot of opposition to that from a lot of different people in the city for a lot of different reasons. But I want to get into rent control, and you wrote this article, editorial type article, and it was published on the cbc.ca. And the headline was "Why Low-Income Earners Should Actually Welcome Ontario's Reversal on Rent Control."
Right. So
very interesting article, and basically you're defending the provincial government's recent announcement that they're removing rent control from this point forward for new dwelling units that have not existed until, you know, as of a couple of weeks ago. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what's your main sort of message, your main point you want people to know about rent control as it pertains to this issue of affordable housing?
So the standard argument made in favor of rent control is that if you limit the amount that rent can increase year over year, you're protecting tenants from, you know, unethical or greedy rent increases by, you know, evil landlords or whatever, what have you. I'm saying that could be true, that if you are an existing tenant, rent control does protect you from these rapid increases. But what is left out of this equation is that by introducing rent control, landlords do not have an incentive to increase their quantity of supplying new rental units. And not just existing landlords, other people who have maybe an extra room in their home and they want to rent it out, they might worry about this. Might worry about charging sufficient rent to cover the costs of having a person living inside your building. And of course, there are costs of having someone live inside your building. And they might worry about those costs might not be covered by the increases in rent. And so they will not bring new rental units onto the market. And it doesn't just stop there. If you are already a landlord and you are renting out a unit at a rent controlled rate of 1,000, and someone down the road or across the street or in another unit in the same building, because they waited a little longer to bring their to rent their unit, is now renting for $2,000 per month, you might not be so inclined to give the same level of maintenance and service to your tenants as the person paying $2,000 a month. And at the same time, if you are a tenant in one of these rent-controlled buildings, in one of these rent-controlled units, lucky enough to get one of these, because, again, the supply would be dwindling over time. But if you were lucky enough to get one of these units, this also will have negative impacts on you. Say you want to... Say you lose your job and you're looking for a new one. By being in a rent-controlled building, you are geographically limiting yourself to where you can now find a job, because you might be too scared to move on the knowledge that if you move to a new unit, you'll be paying a higher rent elsewhere in the city, if not having problems just finding another place to live based on the fact that the rental supply has dwindled so much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So again, rent control is discouraging people from moving. It discourages sort of free movement of people and you know, goods and ideas and knowledge. You know, it's like you said, you're geographically limiting yourself, and over time, you're going to become more and more like, you know, less and less likely to move, right? The further that you fall behind the market rate, the more likely you are to stay in one place and to not move. movement of people, movement of ideas, movement of money is essential to, you know, a capitalistic economy working and thriving and growing.
Right. And growing, and let's be specific about what we mean by growing, is that by growing standards of living for everyone.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, so not people, we're taking a step back. Like you said, it encourages landlords and property owners to not invest in their properties, to not do maintenance and repairs, to not, you know, increase people's standards of living and expectations, okay, because why would they? There's no economic incentive for them to do that. It's not just human nature, like you said, it's an economic reality that it's not even a question of morality or ethics or anything like that. It's simply economics, like you illustrated at the beginning.
To me, it's just so strange that people can look at the technology market in the last 30 years of what's happened with computers, with telephones, with cell phones, and see the great strides in technology that have happened year over year, while at the same time getting cheaper and cheaper. How much did a new computer cost in the early 1990s, say? You know, $4,000 or $5,000? And could it even connect to the internet? Did you have, what were your options for, graphic editing back then? Mm-hmm. Sure. As opposed to now, you can get a $500 iPad and you would have way more computing power, way more graphics power, not to mention access to the entire internet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is just amazing stuff. You're getting more for cheaper and better for cheaper.
Right.
But why don't we see this in housing? It's because we've introduced all these controls on prices and quantities that distort the incentives to provide better and cheaper goods, so that we're stuck with worse and more expensive goods.
Right.
Isn't that strange?
And I've been on record, you know, over time and time and time again on this podcast. I'm obviously very much opposed to rent control for many of the reasons you're outlining as well. What would you say to sort of the counter arguments that you sometimes hear from people that the pro rent control people that are saying, well, look, like, we have a rent, I don't know if you follow the stats closely or not, but like, mm-hmm, we have a very, you know, record high number of new rental apartments being proposed, you know, in the pipeline for the GTA. So people are saying, rent control is not inhibiting new supply from coming on, because this is evidence that, look, we're seeing a more supply now than we had, you know, 3 years ago when we didn't have rent control. So what would you say to that?
So that's Jennifer Keesmaat made that argument when rent control was partially repealed a few weeks ago. And the response there is that it takes many, many, many years to build new rental units, right? So between 5 to 11 years is what I'm familiar with. And, you know, before 2017, we had the infamous 1991 loophole, as it was called, which said that any building built after 1991 was not subject to rent control rules. And so we did see a surge in applications to build purpose-built rentals in the last few years. And a lot of those are coming to market this year or in the next few years. But the economic argument is always about the seen and the unseen. When you introduce rent control, what we're saying is we're going to have fewer rental units on the market than there otherwise would be, right? So we're just simply adding a disincentive to increase rent control, but doesn't mean we're taking that incentive away altogether. So just because we're still getting new rental units coming on the market, doesn't mean that if we took away rent control, that number would be indifferent or it would be unchanging. My view is the standard economics view, that if you took away rent control, we would have even more rental units coming onto the market. And if you took away all the other regulations that delay and otherwise disincentivize building rental units, you would have even more rental units coming onto the market. People respond to incentives, and regulations and price controls are real incentives that decrease quantities.
Right. That's, I mean, it's an incentive for the tenant, like you said, to never move.
Right.
And for that rental unit to never be freed up for anyone else, for supply to be restricted. And it's an incentive, it's a disincentive for the provider of that supply to put new supply into it, because they know that once their customer, the tenant, is in place, essentially the price can never be increased.
Right. So this goes into another issue. So if we are in a market, if we are in a rent control environment, and you already have rental units that you can't demolish for whatever reason, and of course there are laws against demolishing rental units in the city of Toronto. But let's say you have a rental unit and you want to keep this rental unit, and your current tenant is moving out. You're looking for a new tenant. Because you're familiar, because you understand that once you get a new tenant, they're going to be very unlikely to move. To say nothing of the these tribunal laws, landlord and tenant dispute laws that greatly favor tenants. To say nothing of those, you know, just the simple economics of rent control make it very unlikely for a tenant to move. And you're looking for a new tenant. What qualities are you going to be looking for in your new tenant?
Right.
Are you going to be looking for the first person to knock on the door? Or because you know there's a shortage of rental units and the tenant is going to be there for a long time, are you going to be looking to discriminate against your potential tenant to make sure that they will have the means and ability to pay for a long term?
Right.
They'll do this through
if you know your
income statements.
If you know that whatever tenant you pick now, you know they're never going anywhere. You have to assume that. And you have to, so you have to say to yourself, okay, if this is sort of a marriage for life type of arrangement, I'm going to be very picky about who I'm choosing and putting in here. So that young person starting out who applies and who's making, you know, a starter salary versus the established person who comes in, who is making more money and has a better track record economically, then obviously, I'm going to hold out, and I'm going to wait. I'm going to pick that other person. I'm going to, like you said, I'm going to discriminate naturally against the lower quality profile tenant. And as that happens over time, group of people are just going to be finding it harder and harder and harder to find, you know, especially quality housing, housing at all.
Exactly. And this is part of the argument that I make, that rent control hurts low income individuals and families, because they're going to be pitted. They're now going to be competing against high income individuals and families for the same unit, because the number of rental units is going to be decreasing over time.
Right. And it hurts and it helps. Obviously, if you're in the unit, it's helping you. If you never want to move, it's helping you.
It's helping you unless you need to find a new job.
Right.
Right.
If you have no ambitions or, if you're okay with, you know, not ever moving and staying in the same sort of geographical location forever and not pursuing other opportunities.
Basically, if you're retired.
Yeah.
If you're a prime age working adult and you might have to change jobs sometime in the short to medium term, then good luck, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that I always touch on is a big problem that is never really talked about is just the social problems that it creates between people, in the sense that you're paying $2,000 a month and the guy beneath you for the exact same unit is paying $1,000 a month. there's, you know, you're obviously going to resent that person. And naturally that sort of resentment between those who, you know, it's almost like, you know, unions and the whole concept of seniority, right? It's like,
right.
Who gets the promotion in the union? Well, it's not based on merit. It's based on seniority and that kind of concept. It's like, you know, it's people getting financial incentives for no other reason than they just sat in the same place for a long time and didn't ever do anything and go anywhere with their lives, so to speak. Yeah. And I think over time that just is going to increasingly create divisions, you know, amongst like those who are looking for places and those who already have them in the city. And also, you know, tensions between, as we touched on, landlords and tenants as well. It's like the tenant is wanting that fridge to be repaired or, I don't know, that drafty room in the back to be fixed up or whatever. And the landlord's going like, no, like I can't increase my rent to cover any costs of doing that. Right. So why would I, kind of thing. So it's just, as opposed to a natural, you know, every other marketplace, every other good and service in our economy, where it's like, yeah, like if I'm the customer and you're not providing with good service, I go somewhere else. You know,
of course.
And if I'm the service provider, if I'm the business, and if I don't, you know, do a good job, I know I'm going to lose my customer. You know, it's like, but that reality is like taken out of the equation with rent control, and the whole thing is just distorted. And ultimately, it's, you know, it's the opposite of what, you know, a capitalist system is supposed to produce.
Right. And we only get these divisions. We only get these divisions because we have government enforced classes, right? There's a protected class by the government and by optics, by insinuation, then there's a predatory class, right? Who's supposedly trying to predate upon this protected class.
Right.
But of course, most people aren't predators.
We don't talk in those terms about any other business or good of service, but for some
right.
reason in housing, that's exactly how people think about it and talk about it.
Why isn't the guy who owns the convenience store a predator for selling you, carrots above the cost that he bought them?
Right.
Right. But yeah. Apparently if your mortgage is $1,400 and you're charging, you know, $1,800 or $2,000 for a unit, then apparently you are some evil, greedy person.
Yeah.
Right.
And
isn't that strange?
To be stopped.
You need to be thwarted,
but at the
by
same
the
time,
state.
At the same time, we're stopping you and thwarting you. We also want you to build more houses and rent out more properties at a loss.
Right. And we're confused like, that you don't want to do this.
Yeah. Like, why aren't you doing that for us? Why
right.
won't you build us more houses and rent them to us more at more of a loss? Like, it's like, oh my goodness. Well, we could go on and on. This is a very fascinating conversation. I think we're both kind of preaching to the choir here, but it's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Chat about this. If people want to learn more about housing matters and these sorts of things, where's the best place to go again?
So torontohousingmatters.com is our website. In the new year, especially January, we're going to be throwing a lot of updates on there. We've been working on a very large policy paper on the Yellow Belt. That's going to be launched around January 7th, if everything goes to plan. And you can also follow us on Twitter. We're pretty active at @TorontoHousing_.
Great. Yeah, fascinating. Look forward to seeing what you guys are working on and putting out in 2019. And I know you guys have events and stuff too, I noticed.
Yes.
So people who are interested in this and who are advocating for more housing as you are would certainly be a good idea to go check you guys out and come to some of your events and things in the future. So Ash, thank you so much. I'll definitely include a link to all to your website and to your Twitter on the show notes for this episode, which anybody listening, you can find that truecondos.com/podcast for the show notes for this episode and all episodes. Thank you, Ash, so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the True Condos Podcast. Remember, your positive reviews make a big difference to the show. To learn more about condo investing, become a True Condos subscriber by visiting truecondos.com.